We are very fortunate today to be joined by Mr. Marcus Wallenberg. Marcus serves on and often chairs a number of boards of very well-known companies, and we will come back to this. But he is also, with his cousins Jakob and Peter, one of three members of the Wallenberg family, fifth generation. The Wallenberg family has been called Europe's preeminent business family, and they are associated with an amazing ecosystem known as the Wallenberg Sphere, which directly or indirectly involves several dozens of companies representing about $160 billion of revenues, about 600,000 employees in 180 countries. Some of the companies whose name appears within this sphere: ABB, Atlas Copco, AstraZeneca, SEB, Ericsson, Saab, Electrolux, Nasdaq, SKF, Stora Enso, or the well-known private equity firm EQT. But as I was preparing this discussion, I realized, Marcus, that there is a lot I didn't know about this Wallenberg sphere and about the way your family has been guiding its destiny. So I'm very grateful to have this opportunity to discuss this with you today. Again, Marcus, a warm welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So, Marcus, my first set of questions is meant to help all of our viewers understand your and your family's role in guiding this amazing ecosystem of companies. And my first surprise was the fact that your family actually doesn't own these companies. Participation in these companies are held by two major holding companies, Investor, which is publicly listed, and FAM, which is privately held. But these two holding companies are actually largely owned by 15 foundations to which your family over the years gave their shares or that they otherwise created. And then dividends from the investment companies and the holding companies flow back to the foundations, which then redistribute almost all of these proceeds, and that's about, I think, $200 million a year, to a variety of research projects and research organizations involved in science and education, and with a clear objective to help the development and competitiveness of Sweden. So in many ways, your family is more custodians of an enormous empire than actual owners of it, which is quite extraordinary in a global context. So Marcus, my first question is, can you tell us a bit more about this Wallenberg ecosystem or cycle? I've seen both terms used, and why your predecessors structured things this way?
Well, it's hard for me to say exactly why they came to the conclusion to do this, but the first big foundation, which is now the largest of the family foundations, was actually created by my great uncle K. Wallenberg in 1917. And he and his wife had no children. And then onwards, the family members have created foundations in every generation of our family. So actually, yes, you're right, there are several foundations. And it's been a very good way, I think, for our family and in the way we are operating, that actually it's a way to give back, to really have the possibility to support the Swedish society. The family has been very focused on working for Sweden, with Sweden over the years. So it has suited our way we think about ourselves. And also it's been good because I guess in many situations you can come into a discussion about personal wealth. That is not a discussion we have in our family. Those who are participating in working with us, for us in the companies, they do that because they feel that they want to be part of this ecosystem. And that is becoming increasingly clear in this generation that we're in right now.
Indeed, I had seen written in some articles that I think you and your cousin said, look, one of the advantages is this way we don't spend time squabbling over distributing wealth because the wealth is owned by the foundation. And I guess a number of families over the years, of course, have spent enormous amounts of time squabbling about this. You guys don't.
In our set, no, because it's really about, and you have to understand that our focus lies on the one side that the companies are doing well. And that's why we spend a huge amount of time, some of us more than others, but Jakob and I spend most of our time working with the companies, trying to develop them and be sure that we have the right management, the right boards in these companies to make sure that they are operated in a good way. And as you said earlier, giving dividends into the holding companies, and the holding companies then distribute this to the foundations. And then Peter, who is primarily working with the foundations, is seeing to that we have a system in the foundations that do the things that we have set out to do, namely to support Swedish research and education, and to do that for the betterment of Sweden. So that has been the motto over the years, over generations. It's something that we live by, something we really are happy and proud to support continuously, and that we hope we'll be able to continue also in coming generations.
So we're going to come to the investment side, but maybe one last question on the foundation aspect. How do you select the projects or the organizations that you will be supporting? And maybe can you give us one or two examples of organizations or projects or areas that you have decided recently to support?
We have developed the work of the foundations over the years that I've been on the foundations for a long time. And it's quite evident that we have actually moved the focus of the foundations over the years. And today we are spending a lot on individual researchers that we are being recommended by the universities to support. And then we have a very elaborate review systems of a number of a couple of hundred reviewers around the world that help us to determine that these researchers are considered to be excellent and push excellence, because we think that's very, very important. So that's one part of what the foundations do. The other part is supporting major initiatives. One such initiative right now is in the field of artificial intelligence and autonomous systems, which is a 10 to 12 year program, one of the largest ever done in this country. And then a third part of what the foundations do is that we find certain projects which are, of course, supported by certain researchers with a high degree of excellence where we think we can contribute. And the way we think about this is actually that the most important for us is that we are actually contributing to the development of basic research. And the ideas, to a large extent, come from universities. We are being suggested how to set up different projects by universities, and then we basically use all the network to help us out on the excellence question. So that is really what it's all about. And I would say that over the years, we have been trying to identify areas where we believe that Sweden could be helped by developing its knowledge more and more in depth. So for example, 20 years ago, we could see there was a need to develop the knowledge around genomics, which was being developed at the time. And so we did one of these longer term projects and programs to develop that knowledge at several universities in Sweden. So it's one example.
Understood. Thank you for this. So now let's focus on the investment side. And of course, one of the questions is, well, how does this governance work? And how well does it work? And so one of the ways to assess this success, of course, is to look at the performance of Investor, because it's a publicly listed company, a publicly listed group. And of course, the foundations own, I think, about 23% of the shares and control about 50% of the votes because of the dual class share system. And over the last 20 years, Investor has been returning an average of 15% a year, which 15% a year over 20 years is simply extraordinary. And just as a comparison, of course, because we often talk about Berkshire Hathaway in the US, I checked how well they did over these 20 years, and the answer is about half as well as Investor has done. So it's been an extraordinary performance. And of course, the question, Marcus, is what's the secret sauce? How does one succeed so well over so many years?
I think that you have to understand the way these investment holding companies are working. It's basically the result of the performance of the underlying companies in the portfolio. So the management of Investor has done a really good job over the years, but also the companies which constitute the portfolio has been extraordinarily good in certain cases. But you should remember, when you have a portfolio, there is always some companies who are doing very well and some are not doing as well. But I would say that we've been trying to find a balance between ownership, a very engaged ownership, where we make sure that the right board, primarily the chairman and the CEO, is in place, because that is really the key. These individuals play a bigger role than perhaps one can imagine, that it's so important, that are aligned with values and have the same objective as we, as one of the big shareholders in these companies, have. And in most companies, we do have an ownership position which is quite substantial and usually the largest. And that means that in the Swedish corporate governance system, it means that we also have a say in the boardroom, because the Swedish corporate governance system has a board where only the CEO is usually the only executive on the board. So the two-tier board system, the two-tier governance system, has been, I would say, one factor to that we have been able to have good developments in these companies. One also has to remember that besides this, and working with what we think is value creation plans for these companies, where we have an active dialogue with company boards or managements to exchange views on what's going on, all within the rules that are set by the market or whatever. And it's a continuous dialogue that we have through the board memberships and so on. But and we're really trying to see what are the potential of each company that we work with. So that's quite an important part of what we do. Then, of course, you have to have tailwind. And I would say in the last few years, it's been good for some of these companies. They made the right decisions and been able to, in different ways, reshape themselves to a position where they have done quite well in many cases. And I should also say that we have had a composition of investor which has been very favorable. The private equity company you referred to, EQT, has done very well in the development of its values. And some of the industrial holding companies have also done extremely well. So it is, I think, what I'm trying to say here, it is that it is continuous development of the relationships with these companies, trying to stay close without interfering in operations, but still having an active dialogue with these companies that has been very important to us over the years. So that is a little bit of the gist.
Thank you for this. Let me maybe allow me a few follow-up questions on this. You said we're trying to find the right balance between, you know, oversight and engagement. I think your approach has been described as long-term, active, engaged ownership. Is it sometimes challenging to know where the line is? I mean, I happen to be a member of the board of a listed company, and sometimes it's not completely trivial, right? It's when does oversight stop and when do we start to meddle with the company? So tell us how you're thinking about this.
Well, I think that if you look at the Swedish corporate law, basically you could say that being in really responsible for strategy and following up operations, and also, of course, having a very important role of appointing and in some cases dismissing the chief executive, are three of the real important points that the board gets involved with. So I would say that the strategic framework is always, if you look at board evaluations in Swedish companies, people always talk about, you know, should we spend more time on the strategy and etc. So I think that, yes, of course, you could say that you should not meddle into the operations of the company. And I think this is a very important point, because you have to let the CEO do his or her work in a way that they can develop the company according to the strategy that you have set out to do. But I think it's also important to acknowledge that for being a CEO is quite a lonely job, and they need some sort of communication to feel that they are on the move. So I think that most of the chairmen in Sweden, they are to a large extent trying to keep in touch with, or board members trying to keep in touch with the CEO, just to be a supporter or to be somebody who can challenge them or whatever. So I think one has to be very careful not to get into operations, because then you will never know who's really responsible at the end. But depending on what type of company it is, depending on what situation that you're really in, you will have more or less communication with the management of the company. So if there is a company who is really struggling trying to refocus their activities or reconstruct themselves in a different way or trying to fix something that is not working, then it might be it's very important for them to feel that there is a common understanding on where to move certain things on a strategic level. To your point, it's not a simple question, but it's a very important one. I can take an example of certain things that we try to discuss more actively with companies. So just in this time that we're in right now, we as a group have always said that we think that innovation is extremely important in companies where we are operating. We have always had that position. Therefore, we are prepared to support companies who really want to spend more time, more resources on research and development, for example. So that has always been a theme, and that is also resonates very well with what we do in the foundations as well, because we really believe this research question is important for companies who are where the original part is really coming from a country with 10 million people. Here, only innovation can really help us out to stay competitive in the global market. On top of that innovation part, it's more and more obvious that certain cases or certain areas which will require even more attention in years to come. And that's the digitization of operation and the company, not only on the efficiency side, but also what can you offer your customer base. And the other part is, of course, sustainability. And on both these areas, we as owners have been quite active in our discussions with the companies that we feel it's a very important part that they stay on the edge of trying to digitize themselves and try to be on the forefront of sustainability. And we think that that will be very important and defining factors for years to come.
So please allow me to build on this. So the digital aspect, I think we all get, right? We all understand how today the extent to which an organization is able to be world-class at integrating digitization in its operation and strategy will influence their financial success. Sustainability is still a little bit more debated. There are still a number of individuals who say, yeah, in an ideal world, of course, we would be a little bit more sustainable, but that would cost money. And you know, shareholders are so short-term focused. Now, there are also people who are saying, yes, but on the other hand, society will force companies to internalize the cost of their actions and the impact of their actions on the environment and on society. And so companies need to innovate. Please tell us how you're thinking about this and how you're also encouraging companies to think about this.
Well, I think digitization is actually more complicated than we think. That is on the one side. And personally, I think there are so many more things that we could do to improve our offering to companies to make our operations more efficient and spending time on the right thing. And not the least, when I think about what happened during COVID and the banking operation, where basically everybody went digital of our customers. So that is one thing which in turn demands from companies that they would change their business model to operate in a different way versus customers and suppliers. So that's one side of it. The sustainability question, we believe we have taken the view that if you think about the consumer of tomorrow, no matter where they are, sustainability, we believe, will be a very important factor for consumers of tomorrow. And we also believe that working more actively with sustainability will also encourage companies to think differently about their business model. I think digitization and sustainability goes hand in hand to really make it a better way. I think thinking about how you can operate in a more sustainable way will actually help companies to transform themselves over the years. I think the demands of sustainability will just increase over the years, and that's why it's better to be on the forefront. I think we can do things in a better, more sustainable way that will be cost efficient and so on, if you think about how you will do it. And yes, I realize I come from part of the world that sustainability plays a huge role in the public opinion. It's hard to sell if you're a bank in this part of the world. It's hard to sell an investment fund to anybody of your clients if it's not green today. So that means that if your financing is going green, that also demands that you will find companies who are on the sustainable forefront. So I think actually sustainability will be good for business going forward. I think it's going to be the way of the future. I think that, yes, it will mean that you will invest into the future. But I do think that we are in a place right now where we must, from our point of view, have an interest in many companies. I think it's part of building, even though it's, I understand, involves making investments that will be costly and so on. I still think that for the long term, and since we are very long-term focused, for the long term, this will benefit the companies and their customers, give very good returns in the future. That's where we come from.
Thank you for this. Now, two more questions on the investment side. You've mentioned we encourage management and companies to innovate. We also encourage them, obviously, to digitize. We encourage them to invest and be at the forefront of sustainability threats and opportunities. To what extent are you able to encourage a sharing of best practices? So there's a description of the Wallenberg sphere, but many of these companies have their own board, they're publicly listed. Are you able to foster exchanges? And if so, how are you doing it?
Well, we have meetings from time to time on certain themes, but to keep people to understand and know each other, we can't sit and direct people in every direction. That's not the intent. But to have the network is a good thing. So we try to do that from time to time. But we have, in certain aspects, actually created what we would call joint venture companies, not only in companies that are close to us, but also others who would like to join. And we've done it, for example, in within the digital data side. We have a company called Combient, which is now almost 40 primarily Swedish and Finnish companies who are a part of that, where basically they work together on certain projects together with specialists within the digitization. And that actually directs itself from all the way from helping employees to upskill themselves or getting into new areas of knowledge to increasing a better supply chain or innovating in certain fields. And that has been, we've been doing that for a number of years now, and that has been quite good because it's all based on companies making the decision themselves if they want to participate on certain projects or not. So that has been one way for us to, on the terms that the companies themselves had decided, collaborate if they thought that that was an interesting thing. And they're not competitors with each other, so there is no competition question inside there. We've also done a similar thing in 3D printing, where a number of companies come together to develop that technology and run it in a better way. So yes, in specific fields where there is not any competitive questions, but we think that the combination of working together will bring the participants forward faster, and by that being more innovative for the future. We tried that a number of times, and it's been appreciated, I think, by the companies.
So a sort of shared center of excellence.
Yes, and where it's all on the terms of the participants. They decide where they want to participate. And that has been, for us, a helpful tool to bring up certain questions that we think are very, very important.
Now, you mentioned earlier, one of the roles of the board is to appoint and in some cases dismiss CEOs. What are some of the qualities that you're looking for in these CEOs that you appoint or you contribute to appoint at the helm of companies that you either control or are invested in?
Wow. You know, that question, first of all, very much depends on the company, on the type of business, on where the company is in a certain situation, because we have to frankly, you know, realize that if you point a CEO into a company which is in trouble for one reason or another, it's probably a different skill set than from somebody who's where you're trying to find somebody to help expand an already successful company. It's really trying to find the right person for the right company and also at the right time. that particular time in the company developments. We spend a lot of time thinking about that. We all talk about the skill of a CEO. I think, of course, leadership, of course, curiosity, of course, a lot of energy, that they share the same values as the owners of the company. But then, depending on the company, you know, some people need a lot of technical skills, other people need a lot of marketing, financial, etc. But the leadership, I think, and judgment questions are always some of those questions that we are looking for, and that we feel there is a lot of energy in this person who's going to take it on. But, you know, it depends very, very much. I would really like to say that I think it depends extremely on the situation, the type of company. Some companies need somebody who's been operating globally or internationally for years, some more domestically, etc. So I would say that besides the normal qualities of a leader that are very important, I think it also has to be tailor-made for the specific situation.
And that, of course, requires the board to have a very fine understanding of the qualities that are required at this particular point, which requires the board to have also a fine understanding of where the company is, which, if we're very frank, is not always the case with some boards.
Well, it's hard to make a generalization about that, but of course it's helpful if the board is so close to the company that you feel what the requirements are when you need a new leader. Yes, of course. And a board, to me, is really a combination. It's a team of different skill sets. I think it's hard to only have specialists on board. You also need people with a broader view and have different experiences from different situations. So yes, that team of people consisting of the board has to be close enough to the business to really feel what type of leadership we need in the company. Yes, I agree with you, absolutely.
Last question on the investment side. There is this old article from generations ago explaining how a lot of American railroad companies missed the shift to airlines. And one of the things I read about your family is that decades ago, one of your ancestors wrote to another family member and said, look, airlines are the future, are the future. We've got to make that shift. So over the decades, the Wallenberg family has been able, you said earlier, we have to have tailwinds, but you seem to have been able